Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference presented by Janet Buckenmeyer, chair of the Masters of Instructional Technology program at Purdue University Calumet. The session is entitled Peer Mentoring for Quality Distance Education.
Thank you. Well, this session is on peer mentoring for quality of distance education. And the outline of the presentation is as follows. I'm going to give you a brief introduction of the founding members, a bit of an overview of the process, why we came to be, a little bit about the rubric that we chose, which was Quality Matters, then our particular process at Purdue, how this works for us at Purdue University Calumet, some lessons we've learned, and questions I'll take at the end. So the introduction, there were six I'll talk a little bit more about how this group actually came to be. There was a task force that was started, but the initial group were six professors. As you can tell, they're multidisciplinary professors. Heather Zamoyski, who was also supposed to be here or could not, is now currently coordinating the program. She is the instructional technology coordinator at our campus, Purdue University Calumet, which is about an hour and a half north of Purdue West Lafayette, the main campus. At any rate, I'll try to answer any questions currently about the program. I am not directly involved with the program currently. I was part of the initial startup group. If I can't answer your questions, I'll have Heather's email at the end. It's here, and it'll be at the end as well, her office. So feel free to contact her as well for anything that any additional information that I may not be able to provide. A little bit of an overview of the process. We implemented a peer-to-peer mentoring program to ensure the quality of online classes offered by the campus. I'm going to talk about this. This was in your program. I'm going to talk about exactly what happened, some of our first year results, and some of the lessons we've learned. So this started as a need that the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs saw. We were beginning to offer more and more online classes, and it was stretching into online programs and certificate programs. And basically, the Vice Chancellor wanted to ensure that we were not going to be just another diploma mill, that we were going to ensure the quality of the courses and the programs that we offered online. So very big part of this is that we had the administrative support from the beginning. This administrator appointed a task force to be formed, and it was interdisciplinary as well. I was part of that task force, and our task was to search out other programs that were going on and choose a model that we wanted to implement on our campus. So after looking at a variety of different models and a variety of different programs, our particular group chose the Quality Matters. And as a matter of fact, one of my colleagues was here at Educause several years ago, back in 2003 or 2004, and heard a presentation, I'm assuming from Quality Matters or some group that was using Quality Matters, and she brought this information back to us. And after looking at a lot of different models, we determined that Quality Matters best suited our needs and would ensure a quality online program. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Quality Matters process and then how it was implemented at Purdue University Calumet. If you are not familiar with Quality Matters, I would suggest, and if you're looking at trying to do something like this at your school, I would suggest that you look at Quality Matters. It was a grant-funded program developed by University of Maryland Online. And the address I'll give you again, but it's qualitymatters.org. The task force decided that we would use this mechanism along with a peer review and peer-to-peer faculty mentoring program. So this is what the Quality Matters program looks like. And as you can tell, it starts with the course, that the faculty develops the course, and it moves into a peer review of that actual course that's been developed. We provide feedback, whoever the peers are. If the course meets expectations, it can run. And if it doesn't meet expectations, then we allow for a course revision, and then it goes through this whole circle again. There are standards that are set with the University of Maryland with the Quality Matters rubric. I'll talk about what those essential standards are in just a second. It provides for continuous improvement. So even though the course is offered once, it allows a professor and a peer group to continually revise the program. And we use three faculty review. Well, actually, Quality Matters uses three faculty to review. And we adopted that same model. We have three faculty who are certified in Quality Matters, who assess the courses. Now, what we added that Quality Matters does not provide for, we started with a peer mentoring process. So as the faculty is developing the course, we provided peer mentoring for them, and we also offered workshops and training for our faculty developing online courses. Now, I should mention here that the training really didn't focus as much as the use of technology as it did on instructional design. And I'm going to talk about the results of that in a minute. That frustrated some faculty because they were coming into this thinking, okay, well, we use Blackboard on our campus. So they were expecting that we were going to show them how to use Blackboard, how to use the Dropbox, how to send email, use discussion boards. We incorporated that in some of those workshops, but the main component of this peer-to-peer mentoring was instructional design and focusing on what good instruction looks like. So, what is Quality Matters? Well, they developed a research-based rubric, and as I said, it was developed by Maryland Online. It includes 40 elements across 8 standards. I'm going to talk about those 8 standards in a minute. And this is the website if you want to know more information about Quality Matters. So these are the 8 general standards that all courses had to follow. Starting with a course overview and introduction, probably a lot of you know that sometimes when faculty who aren't well-versed in instructional design begin to develop online courses, they take what they traditionally do in class, just throw it online, and call it a course. Well, a student getting online doesn't have the benefit of the verbal cues and nonverbal cues that they get from a professor in class, so they look at this hodgepodge of stuff and say, where do I even start? So we mandated that each course must have the course overview and introduction so the students know where to start. Learning objectives for each module have to be clearly stated so students know exactly what they're expected to learn. Assessment and measurement has to be included, and of course those have to align with the course objectives. Resources and materials and learner interaction all have to, again, align with the course objectives. So how are the students going to interact with the material, with each other, with the faculty? The technology is there to enhance the process. It does not drive the process. Learner support, obviously, if you're going to offer online courses, you have to have 24/7 support for students on your campus. A lot of students want to work at 2 in the morning, if nobody's there to answer their questions, you're going to get a higher dropout rate. And then finally, accessibility for students with special needs. So those were the 8 standards. These were the 14 essential elements that had to be included in every course. Now, you can read those yourselves, and if you want a copy of this PowerPoint, I'll get it online, or feel free to take my card and I'll email me, and I'll send you a copy of this. But these were the 14 essential elements out of the 40 that the faculty member developing the course had to pass in order for us to allow that course to be put online. So there were 36 others that they didn't necessarily have to pass the first time. These were the 14 that they absolutely had to meet in order for the course to be offered online. And of those 14 essential elements, these are the primary focus points. Navigability. How is the student going to get through the course? Are they able to see where they start, what they do first, how they proceed through the module, how they end the module, how they move on to the next module, how the course ends? Very, 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 very important. And in my personal experience, I found that a lot of times that was the most neglected piece of professors wanting to put up the course. Probably the second most neglected piece was the alignment piece. You have to have those course objectives clearly stated so the students know exactly what they're going to learn. All of the instructional materials, how the student proceeds through that, needs to align with the course objective. And then, of course, quite obviously, the assessment needs to align with the course objectives as well. So that was the second piece that needed to happen. So each module had to be clearly defined, those activities had to be aligned, and the measurement had to be aligned as well. And I'm sorry, I got to alignment. I missed interaction. The second most important piece was interaction, which was how is the student going to actually learn the material? Well, in a normal classroom, in a traditional classroom, the student reads the textbook, they do some activities, they interact with groups, they interact with the professor, but it's much more difficult in an online environment. So we mandated that the course, that every course had to allow for student to content more than just reading text and answering questions. Secondly, students had to interact with each other, so provided through discussion forums, blogs, other pieces, whatever. And then finally, the student and instructor. And again, we had a few instructors who put their courses online and never showed up again. And the students were not getting professors to respond to questions or respond to problems, and obviously the dropout rate would be much higher. So part of the process was the instructor had to be on several times a week, as well as mandating the student be on several times a week. So that's the Quality Matters process, but now how did we actually implement this at Purdue University Calumet? Well, the task force chose 6 faculty members who had experience in offering distance education courses already, and I was one of those 6. You saw the other 5 at the earlier slide. We also had mentoring skills. We were chosen as mentors in 2006. At the time, the dean of the School of Education was actually in charge of this process. It has since moved over to Heather Zamoyski in the Office of Instructional Technology, but he was actually the driving force behind this whole peer-to-peer mentoring process. Before we were actually allowed to mentor, we had to complete the mentor peer review training, which was offered by University of Maryland online. And that was about a 3-week online intensive training course. So we actually had practice mentoring and working in an online environment. So then the mentors, along with the rest of the task force, actually developed the process. So there were probably about 20 of us, again, interdisciplinary, who were involved. And then we solicited for volunteers. And again, this was funded and promoted by the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs. And surprisingly, we are of a faculty, I can't tell you exactly how many faculty we have. We have about 9,000, almost 10,000 students on campus, several hundred faculty. Surprisingly, we had 27 faculty who applied to be part of this process. Again, very interdisciplinary. One of the keys to this process was that as a faculty, I'm a faculty member in the School of Education, the faculty that I mentored were not members of the School of Education, so I actually got proteges that I had never met before. So again, like I said, it was funded by the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs. Very, very, very important. I can't stress enough how important it is to have the administrative support, because in order to make this work, the Vice Chancellor had to fund it. So those of us who were mentors and those of us who were developing courses were given a quarter-time release, so either to serve as mentor or protege. And this was extremely important because if you've developed online courses before, you know that there's a lot more front-load work than there is a traditional course. Traditional course allows you to make mistakes along the way and you can cover for them. An online course doesn't give you quite that flexibility, so there's a lot of planning and thought that needs to go into this process. So we were given a quarter-time release in order to do this. Mentors for the entire year because we were involved in the entire process, the proteges for the fall semester as they were developing the course, and the intent was that they would offer this course in the spring, and we would be online as a silent member of the course and making comments along the way. At the beginning of the semester, in August, we had 2 face-to-face days of orientation. And that introduced the proteges to their mentors and to the quality matters standards and what was to be expected of them. And also, they got a whole lot of instructional design during those 2 days. We did a quick course on what instructional design is. So after that, as the faculty were developing the courses, we met face-to-face as a group once each month. And that was during the fall semester. So one Friday, which was a day nobody wanted to come in, but everybody had free, we would offer a lunch session, again, funded by the Vice Chancellor. And we would present different aspects of instructional design. If proteges had questions that were good for the whole group, then we talked about those issues. We showed them some of, you know, podcasting a little bit of and developing quality discussions online. And we did bring in the tools during these. We didn't bring in the tools at the very beginning sessions, but during the weeks we started to incorporate the tools. And of course, like every faculty on every campus, we had a wide range of abilities, some who are really tech wizards and some who are tech novices. And the key to bringing this together really lied with the mentor. And how do we allow the tech wizards to move on while following instructional design processes, while at the same time sort of holding the hands of those who are a little afraid of using the technology? And I'll talk about a little bit about how that happened. So, again, this is what we talked about, creating assessments, the different types of media that we have available on our campus. And then throughout that semester, we met with our proteges. Most of us met as an unneeded basis. I had several proteges, one who liked to work by himself, and a couple of them who preferred a little bit more face-to-face session. So we were assigned 4 to 5 faculty members. And again, that's a little bit of a high number when you're dealing with such a wide range of abilities, but this was our initial year. Courses were preliminary reviewed by us, the mentors, at the end of the fall semester. So together with our protege, we sat down, we took a look at the course, we went through the rubric. University of Maryland, the Quality Matters rubric is a very, very well-detailed rubric. We sat down with our faculty member and together we looked at the course and identified any areas that may have needed improvement. So after that process happened, and we determined at that point that the course was ready to run, courses were taught in the spring. And again, mentor sat in as a silent partner on that. At the end of the spring semester, those courses were reviewed using the exact same rubric by a team of mentors, but not the protege's mentor. So I was not part of the team that certified my proteges, because obviously I had a vested interest in their outcome. So we chose 3 different faculty members for each particular protege, and courses were reviewed using that rubric. And the proteges then presented their courses to the entire group at a big meeting in the spring. So what I just said, this is what it looks like. This is our process at Purdue University Calumet. We mentored from September to December. We had the 2-day knowledge exchange session. We focused on instructional design, the Quality Matters rubric. Then we had monthly workshops. Obviously, there were 4 in all, and emphasizing skill development, problem solving, instructional design, and then obviously various types of media. The proteges actually taught their courses from January to May. We reviewed along with them as they were working on their courses. We were offering suggestions when they had real-life students in their courses. And then during this time, we started recruiting for our next group of proteges and mentors. We evaluated the course. Most of the course evaluations were handled in early June at the end of the semester. There were a few who did not pass originally, so we continued to evaluate throughout the summer. Courses can pass. They can pass conditionally, or then they can require further review. I'll tell you how our particular group, how they measured. And then finally, we had an acknowledgement in September where the proteges whose courses successfully passed, we were invited to a recognition that the Chancellor and Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs both attended. It was a sort of an award luncheon. And the mentors were also recognized for their efforts, because it takes a lot of work to be a mentor. Can I take questions at the end? Just hold on to that. So we had a very high completion rate. We had a few that dropped out early because of time conflicts or other things that came up, because things come up. So we had a few that did not meet program deadlines. But we had 25 of the 27 that actually went on to complete the process. So we had a very high completion rate. And some of those received pending certification. They were given time and to make there any changes that were required in order to receive final certification. And those two that were that received pending did finally end up receiving full certification. Now, I do want to add a little story in here, because I was the newest faculty member of that was chosen to be one of the mentors. And there is a faculty member that had applied, a full professor, had been there forever, and one of those professors that didn't have a very good, a lot of people didn't have a very good opinion of him, I guess, because he challenged a lot of things, and so they decided to give this professor to me in my mentoring group. And I think part of the reason was is because he didn't know me. I was the only person he didn't know. They thought maybe I would work better with him, and I didn't have any problems with him at all, because I don't mind questions, I don't mind being challenged, I don't mind having to prove what I'm saying. And he was asking for proof and a lot of different ideas and different things like that. And he wanted to see examples, and I didn't mind providing examples of what quality courses look like, because he was the type that actually had to see them. He couldn't just think of them in his mind. At any rate, he was one of the 25 who passed. He was one of the 25 who, at the end of the program, said, I came into this thinking there wasn't anything else I could learn about teaching. I'd been teaching forever, and I didn't think that you could teach me another thing, and I was wrong. Not only did am I teaching my online courses a different way, but that instructional design process has permeated into my traditional courses, and I'm teaching my traditional courses in a much more engaged way than I ever have. Not only did he say those kind and wonderful things, and not only is that showing up in all of his courses, but he and I and another faculty member went on to write an article, and that's going to be published soon in the International Journal of E-Learning, which is produced by another organization. So that nice little graphic that you saw that describes our process, that was one that we developed at any rate. So I just want to encourage you that even faculty members who may be a little hesitant to try the idea, once they've actually been in it, they I don't want to say they converted, because that doesn't sound quite right, but they actually changed their thinking, changed their teaching style, and that was probably one of our biggest success stories. So we also have professors who have come from other universities or who have obviously learned to develop quality online courses from other places. So we do offer an alternative certification so that someone does not necessarily need to go through this process. So if they want to go through that, they submit their course, and they have to go through, they have to meet the Quality Matters checklist like any other course. And we also expect that they show us proof of some kind of completion of an alternative program. So some of the lessons that we learned that first year, we realized that 4 to 5 faculty to mentor were far too many for any one mentor, even with a faculty release of a quarter time. Again, a variety of faculty with a variety of different needs, and we reduced that ratio, and it's still supported again because it costs the vice chancellor money, but it's been supported, and it's been reduced 3 to 1. An online course website, which we had, but it wasn't developed very well that first year, has been added so that all the mentors and proteges have access to the resource materials, and the discussion piece and learning how to actually play in an online environment have been added so that they have a sort of a safe place to work. And the fall orientation, we took all that instructional design and reduced it down to 1 day, because faculty are very, very, very busy at the beginning of the year, and 2 days ended up being quite a bit. So we've got the 1 day session, but we've kept the monthly meetings. Some other changes: the dean of the School of Education no longer is involved. He obviously has a lot of other things on his plate, and that has been moved. We have a brand new Office of Instructional Technology, which actually falls under the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs. So it's an academic affairs. It's not an information technology department. And Heather is the head of that, and she now runs this program. We have added further activities to the online portion, so the faculty members who are learning this process have a lot of opportunity to play in Blackboard and all the different things, the features that are available. And obviously, not only do they have access to their own mentor, but if they have access, they also have access to other mentors, and we all bring in our certain areas of expertise. So that's been increased. We also have a new Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs, and I had the opportunity to meet with him last month. And he is so encouraged about this program that he is thinking that they may require this of all new faculty who come in, because not only, again, does it help with teaching online courses and ensuring quality in programs, courses, certificate programs, but it also translates into the traditional teaching. And so often new faculty don't have, we don't have mentoring programs set up in place. And this would be a great place for faculty to sort of get connected and learn a little bit about instruction before they're thrust into their first classroom. And that's it. Do you have any questions? Well, as a group, we only meet once a month. But faculty, the mentors can meet with protégés at any time.
Questions going out into the individual session and then reviewed at the end of the month so everybody can see what they are, or are they brought up at the end of the month?
No, actually, those monthly sessions were devoted to training. If there are common questions that we were all getting the same question on, then they were brought up during that time. Most of the time, we focused mostly on instructional design with some of the tools that were available. So we didn't, you know, generally those questions were addressed by mentors individually with their protégés. But like I said, if there were questions for the common good, then they were brought up during. If we were seeing patterns with our protégés, I should say one of the other problems that we had the first year is we didn't require hard deadlines for development of the course, and so we found out in December that a lot of faculty were you know, all of a sudden struggling to get that course put together. So since then, we've incorporated harder deadlines so that the development is through that entire fall semester. All of it's in-house. Like I said, the six original mentors went through the Quality Matters training process. And I'm assuming that the additional mentors had to go through that, but I'm not certain if that's been a requirement. Of the six mentors, I think three are still mentoring. So, in our own university. So yes, we are not a paying member of Quality Matters. We do not review others' courses. We look specifically at those 14 essential standards. Those are the key for us. You're right, for the 40 points, there's some gray areas, and so we give the professors the benefit of the doubt as long as those 14 points are met. I'll answer the second question first. The other faculty, there is a requirement that by the year 2011, that any faculty who was teaching an online course or program must be certified, whether they're certified through our in-house program or whether they can prove alternative certification. So that has been put in place, and we're working toward that. As far as how the faculty members were selected, they had to apply, and they had to obviously provide a reason why they had to provide a reason why they wanted to participate, and they had to get the approval of their dean or the department head in order to move on. I think we've pretty much taken everybody who's applied, unless, you know, they don't provide bad reasons. They, you know, well, because I want the quarter release. We haven't ever seen that. I mean, there are professors who are legitimately offering courses online, and they're planning to develop online courses or whatever. So fortunately, thus far, we've had the ability to take everyone who's applied. Other questions right here?
So have you started to try and scale up the numbers of mentors you
have? Actually, we have, because the first time we had six, and because we've reduced that number to three, I think there are now 10 to 12 mentors per year. And those mentors were the mentors that came from the second and third groups had been previous protégés, so they've gone through the program and they're certified. There's not a lot of turnaround of faculty on our campus, and you know, we've already been through about 90 people over 3 years, and we've got a few more years to go. And there will obviously always be some faculty members who will never offer an online course. I don't think that we're planning to expand this program any more than where it's currently at. Back there.
With this, or from faculty members using it to do a hybrid course?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of the faculty members who go through this actually end up doing hybrid courses. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Not yet, although that has been a question that has come up, and it is also the Vice Chancellor and the task force have recommended that adjunct faculty who teach online for us would have to go through this process as well or prove certification. As of this point, it's not been implemented because it's a little bit more difficult to do with adjunct faculty. I'm sorry, what? I can't totally answer that one. That might be a question you'd want to ask Heather and that her, the OIT. That's something that they may be able to. I'm not as certain as, you know, the logistics and where the money comes from and those things, but I would hope so. Any other questions? Well, I'll stay up here if you have any questions. Thank you. You've been a terrific audience.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.